5AA Afternoons with Leap Forest.
25 minutes to two. Thanks for tuning in on this Thursday afternoon. As you've been hearing on 5AA for the last week or so, we're delighted to have Anderson Solicitors here for an interactive lounge on the really important issue of wills and trusts and estates. We will give you the chance after this chat to actually speak to both of our guests off air. So confidentially, you'll be able to do that in our interactive lounge on 8223 0055. But in the meantime, before all of that, we get a chance to chat to them on air. Felix Holscher is here. He's the managing partner and Brad Harvey senior associate for Anderson Solicitors. Men, welcome. Lovely to see you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, mate.
This is one of those topics, isn't it, Felix, that it's really important, and if you don't address it early, it could lead to problems down the track for you.
Absolutely. No, we're seeing a lot of change within wills and estate planning, really. Probably the biggest ones are the rise of AI.
Mm-hmm.
That's playing a role, people having a go at making their will at home.
Yep.
And the other is blended families, really, which is people on their second relationship with children from a previous relationship. So.
Yeah.
Both of those are quite challenging in terms of wills and estate planning.
Gets a little bit tricky. I want to break those down with both of you if we can in a second. Let's talk about you guys personally if we can, though. So, Felix, first and foremost, 2+ decades?
Yes, 2+ decades at Anderson's. Took ownership there about 10 years ago.
Yep.
And now in the partnership role and really enjoying the practice, the people, great firm.
20 years ago versus today, what's the biggest change you've noticed in that time?
I think really the complexities of the business as well,
yep.
That there's just a lot more happening, a lot more red tape, a lot more strenuous,
yes.
But also incredibly rewarding just to see the young crowd coming through and the quality of the work that we're getting. So, no, it's great.
And Brad, you're like the overnight sensation who's been doing it forever. So you've been in the industry 8, 10 years?
About 8 years, yep. Yeah.
And at Anderson's for a couple?
Anderson's for a couple of years, yeah. Previously worked in a local country firm. So
yep.
Now with Anderson's and across a couple of the departments there, mainly in wills and estate planning, estates,
yep.
Estate litigation and some commercial law as well. So try and do a few areas there.
Did you think when you come into the industry, is it one of the things that people always talk about but never do? Yeah, I'll do my will, I'll fix this, I'll do this, I'll sort this out.
Absolutely.
And then for whatever reason, it's one of those things that people push to the side.
Yeah, we find that quite a lot, right? They'll do it right later on in life, whether it's a, sometimes we see it in an urgent scenario, such as the hospital or
yep.
You know, illness and things like that. So, yeah, it's always good to get onto these things early.
One of those things that you should do earlier, but for whatever reason, we do put it off. Like it's, and there's a great line here, it's not just a piece of paper with instructions, is it? It's so important to have. And yet people think, oh, I'll get to that. We all think we're going to live forever. I'll get to that at some stage.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think there's a bit of confusion between what they're actually getting versus what they need, in the sense that a will is ultimately just a piece of paper. And it's a piece of paper that sets out your wishes into the future. But there has to be structure and advice and planning strategy behind,
yes,
that piece of paper. Otherwise, sometimes it does more damage than it's actually trying to prevent.
Not physically you'd want to do it. Do you want to shake people at times and just go, get your stuff in order? Because it would, I assume you would see nice, easy, simple jobs.
Yep.
And then there would be some others where you just want to pull your hair out and think, why did people not plan earlier? The
old
prior preparation kind of,
yeah,
theory. How does AI get involved in this? When 20 years ago, you wouldn't have had to worry about any of these.
Well, AI is sort of the new post office will, isn't it? In the sense that people used to,
yes,
go, well, I can do a will kit. I'll just pop down to the post office, get a will kit and do,
yep,
it myself. Instead of doing that, people are now firing up Google or whatever their AI program might be and putting some instructions in, and it churns out a basic will, and they read it and they think, well, this reflects what I'd like, and here's my will. I didn't need a lawyer. I didn't need advice. I've got what I want, and here it is. It's in black and white. And that's understandable, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is understandable, but it is a perfect example of sometimes if you don't put the correct instructions in,
mm-hmm,
what you get out at the other end doesn't work. And if people don't know what instructions they need to put in, they also don't know that the result they've received at the end is no good.
Yes.
That's the problem.
So it's almost like those AI photos where it looks right until you look at the hands and then you think, so you guys would see that as lawyers, you would all of a sudden, someone thinks that they've done the right thing, much like those post office ones you talked about,
mm-hmm,
but then,
yeah,
all of a sudden you've got issues that,
yeah,
spruik up. And what do you do? Because the person's gone.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. What's the major issue you have with wills? If you were to do a pie graph, is there one thing in particular that people do wrong in their will? Is it just not having a will? Is it incorrect
I'll let Brad talk about the technical points maybe of mistakes when people sign wills or draft them.
Yep.
But just turning to the issue of the blended family, that is actually a huge one because blended families are becoming more and more common. And the issue there is that the status of stepchildren is different to the status of natural children. So let's just say that a couple form a relationship or get married and they both have children from a previous relationship.
Yes.
Over time, particularly if that happens while the children are still quite young, they consider the mixed bag of children as our children, and they might do an AI or a post office will or a simple will that they've prepared themselves where they leave everything to each other and then to our children or the children in equal shares, meaning all of the children. And that's very well-meaning and good-hearted. And when they see that in black and white, it creates a warm, fuzzy feeling. But what they don't understand is that if one of them passes away, the other one is not actually obliged at law to continue to make that provision for the deceased one's children on the basis that they're stepchildren, not natural children.
Right.
And so the end outcome then is there's quite a bit of complexity to allow those stepchildren to contest that will so that they can get their deceased natural parents' share of the estate.
Yeah, we never saw that episode of the Brady Bunch, like working out the wills of the kids, because that would be a logistical nightmare. And again, emotions are going to be hurt and, and relationships potentially get, you know, destroyed or really strained, don't they?
Yeah.
So what about on your side? So the technical side of that, Brad?
Yeah, so practically I deal a lot with doing deceased estates. So when someone passes away, we see often with those home kit type wills, potentially handwritten ones that someone's just done and got witnessed, there can be a wide range of problems. Whether it's executed correctly is probably the main one. That can be what's considered an informal will. If you haven't signed it correctly with the right amount of witnesses pursuant to the Act, what happens is you have to then show the court that, or the Supreme Court probate registry, that the person that wrote that will intended it to be their will and that it was actually, regardless of its informality, a testamentary intention. The other thing I think we find too is, again, going back to what Felix was saying about well-meaning with writing wills, someone might, for example, when they're appointing an executor of their will, write down something like, I appoint my mates at the footy club, for example. That's not clear and you don't know who can actually take the will as the property as an executor when getting that admitted for probate. Some of the other common ones we might see is a will kit will where someone decides to write something additional later on in life. They'll pick up, they'll go, this is my will, I might just add my car to someone. Again, that creates an informality and can be quite a logistical nightmare or a bit of a problem when trying to administer the estate.
Are there actually people who hand write their wills?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we see quite regularly, yeah.
And it's legal?
Well, it is
legal. If they tick all the boxes you mentioned.
Yeah, and if they don't tick the boxes, it can still be a valid will, but you have to provide a lot of evidence to show that person meant it to be their will.
Wow.
At significant cost.
Yeah.
And you can run into the strangest problems. We've seen wills that are, on the face of it, perfect in a way, but when it comes time to do something about getting them through the courts under probate, what looks to be a perfect will, in fact, isn't, because it turns out the person who signed the will can't read a scrap of English. And really what should have been done is a clause put in saying that it was read to them, interpreted for them, and they agreed it and then signed it. So it's a different signing clause, and that's just something out of the blue that you would never pick up on just simply reading the document. But the death certificate might say, born overseas, came over here late in life.
Yep.
And really, the question is asked, well, did this person actually understand it? Or the medical certificate might say that they passed having suffered dementia shortly before their death or some other affliction. And the court says, well, how do we know that the person who signed this on the face of it perfect document in fact understood what they were signing? Because if they didn't, it's not a valid will.
Wow, it's almost like a certificate of authentication when you buy like memorabilia to make sure that it's the right thing.
Yeah.
We see a lot of these cases in the press, you know, particularly high profile, if I can say, rich families. That is there always, I guess, when there's money involved and there's family involved, that's when it gets really tricky, isn't it? Because everyone has a different story. And if the will's not done properly, you can understand why each side of the fight are fighting for what they believe they deserve.
Well, I mean, even when the will's done properly as well, that will, you know, if it's a perfectly executed will, but a family member that would be entitled to claim for further provision of the estate, like a child or a spouse, then, even if it's a valid will, they can still contest it. So that's often where a lot of these high-profile media cases come from, I think, is when someone's left out and is ultimately entitled to make a claim. How successful that claim is subject to whether it be court or mediation.
Yeah, you often hear that, the children of the deceased person's got a new partner, etc., that has been changed, and you think it's original versus the new person in the life. That must be a lot of work for you.
Yeah, again, that goes back to the blended family thing. The law has recently changed to broaden the scope to include stepchildren, but they still have to meet certain tests and thresholds in order to claim against a step-parent's estate. And there's much cleverer ways of making sure that both sets of children from both sides are looked after. And examples might be through the use of trusts, through the use of life interests in property for the surviving spouse, providing for the spouse from super rather than the rest of the estate. All of those can be much more tax-effective and proper ways of dealing with a blended family scenario compared to saying we leave everything to each other and then when the last of us goes to our children together and just hoping for the best. Because if one person dies early, let's say it's a youngish couple in their 40s with children who are in the first decade of their life.
Yep.
If one of them dies, then arguably on a simple will like the one I've just told you about, the surviving spouse theoretically has to maintain the deceased one's affairs for the next 20, 30, 40 years for the benefit of what were stepchildren from back then.
Wow. So I know you're going to take calls about this off air, which is always great. And thank you for doing that, because people have, I'm sure, conversations going on in their own households and their own families with their own issue. And they're all confidential. They're all off air. I'll use myself as an example, though. I'll throw myself to you guys as the wolves just to get an idea. And so we have this conversation in my family all the time about my parents. No, my parents have a will, but we have this conversation of when my parents die, my brother and I would just split everything 50-50, which sounds good in fairy tale land, probably, but I'm sure you come into all sorts of issues if it's not narrowed down more. As does he get to pick first or he get to pick first? What's the value? Is the devil in the detail? Do you just need as much detail as you can in a will, or you can still get around things like that?
I think it really depends on the circumstances and the nature of the assets, really. I think if you're talking it's personal effects, you get on amicably and it says I give everything equally to my two children, and you both go in and split it and you're happy with it and agree to it when the distribution happens, that's no problem. But I think if you're talking where it's just we give everything equally to my kids and perhaps there's very valuable paintings that have been passed down the family or something like that, and you're looking at a possible, you know, I prefer that, no, it should stay in the family, or we should sell it to you know, get the wealth to split between us. Yes. I think that's where perhaps the devil should be in the detail more. And if you do want to keep something in the family, you would specify that in the will.
Yeah, and I've heard that too, like, you know, private properties or a beach house. One wants to keep it, one wants to sell it.
Yeah, there's a power of apportionment. So they can potentially agree between them how it's to be split. But where estates are becoming more and more valuable as the value of real estate rises, we're no longer seeing that many small estates. Usually they're getting bigger and getting bigger by the year.
Yes.
And where there is a high-value estate, there's a real question mark about whether it should go directly to a beneficiary or be placed into a testamentary trust for them, whether they can split the income from the assets of the trust, they can make distributions amongst family members, and to a degree, the inherited assets are protected from creditors and other things like that, so they're not lost. They're maintained for generations.
I don't know if you're allowed to say this. With everything you're saying, it kind of seems bonkers that people would do it from the post office. Like, there seems to be so much. Is that the message of the day, that it's just you really need to speak to a professional? Because think, whilst it might be easy and efficient and quick, it's going to lead to problems if you don't do it right.
Yeah, well, what you're getting by retaining a professional is the knowledge, the strategy and the advice which goes into making the document rather than the document itself.
What happens if you lose a will?
Well, I guess if there's a validly signed, if there's a copy, an assigned copy of the will, and the will's been lost, then you can still get probate of that will. It's a copy will application, and we do these, I would say, a few times a year. But again, there's a lot of evidence that needs to say that it wasn't intentionally destroyed by the person that wrote it. And I mean, if you can show that it was lost in affidavit evidence, and ultimately that's compelling enough, then it will be still actually seen as the testamentary document or the will. A copy can be considered a will.
Yep.
If that person held the copy, thought it was their will at all times, then of course it can be subject to all that evidence, but it might not be that simple. If they can't rebut the presumption that it was destroyed,
then
you're not going to get that across, and then you potentially have intestacy, which is where there's no will and direction.
The other advantage... The other advantage of doing it through a law firm is the notes, really, because if a will is contested or lost, very often it's not just that document you're looking for, but you have access to the entire file that led to the generation of the document.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be really quite helpful in those sorts of cases.
I'm a big believer. I teach my kids all the time, prior preparation prevents poor performance. Are you like that in the will game? Like, people should come and see you and get your plans in early before you get to that. You imagine there's enough emotion and sadness and grief and anger and all the rest of those emotions when someone passes. If you can get it all done before that, man, that's going to make your life a lot easier, isn't it? And simpler from there. So get in early. Is that the message?
Get in early.
Yep. Get prepared.
Yep.
Thanks for coming in. I mean, it's fascinating. We could talk about this for eight. I'm really interested to see the kind of calls, and you're not going to tell us because it's confidential, but I hope that people use this opportunity now to tap into your expertise. As we mentioned, Felix, you've been doing this for 20 plus years, and Brad, yourself, the best part of 10. Any questions that people have? Before we let you into the lounge, what's the kind of things that you would like to hear from people? What's the messaging you think?
Look, we're open to any questions. We want to help people, and it's a great opportunity for callers to ring in and get some advice. I think that's great. Obviously, what we can talk about is today at a high level, if people want to come in and discuss it in greater detail.
Yep.
Every will is tailored to that person or their circumstances. There is usually no one blanket cover fits all type scenario. So we can give them some ideas, some feedback, and then if they want some further advice, we can talk to them later.
Can I give you one? Do I need to say, if my wife and I die tomorrow, do I need to say who my kids go to?
Well, if they are under the age 16 of
16 and 14.
Yeah, you would need to consider guardianship and who would look after them.
I don't know if I've got that in my will. I might have to come and see you. It's a conversation that we have all the time.
Because
the kids want to live with the family in America. And then you think you've got friends here, and they go, well, we'll have them. And others go, well, we'll have them. I have to double check that. And again, I'm probably, like many people listening now, we know we've got a will, but maybe it's not as detailed, perhaps, as it needs to be.
And I think, too, this is probably a little bit further than what we've just talked about, but when you say family overseas as well, you'd want to consider that if they're an executor or a beneficiary also, that can sometimes have its own issues too, for tax resident purposes. That's something you'd want to consider.
I understand why you guys are busy. Thank you so much. I know you. It's great to have you here and to be able to tap into this resource. So thanks for giving us the opportunity. So right now, Felix Holscher and Brad Harvey from Anderson Solicitors, Managing Partner and Senior Associate, respectively, they're going to go into our interactive lounge. If you have a question about wills, if you have a question about trusts, if you have any questions about advice and what to do, there's no better chance. You can speak to a lawyer on the end of the phone right now, solicitor 8223-0055. You'll be in there for a while. Thank you again for doing this for us, and greatly appreciate the information. I'm sure it's going to come in handy for a lot of people.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Felix Holscher, Brad Harvey, 8223-0055. Look, people are calling in already. Get your legal questions in about wills, about trust. There's no such thing, I'm sure you both agree, as a silly question. I probably asked most of them on air. 8223-0055. Go to it.